This is January 4th, Shirley Bradley and Lisa Fine interviewing Otto Abes. This is January 4th and it's 10 a.m. And this is the new year, 1993.
I have a remote and I can close up. Okay, Mr. Abes, you told us out in the showroom that you were born here in Lansing. Okay.
1927.
Okay. And were your parents born here as well? Or in the United States?
Yeah, in the United States.
They're from the United States?
Yeah, they're from Sunville, Mulligan area.
Okay. Okay, so they're from sort of the outlying areas of Lansing. Were they farmers?
No. Yeah, we're all farmers, because we were all on a farm.
Okay.
I was born and raised on a farm.
Okay.
And my mother was born and raised us on a farm.
So you were born on a farm in Lansing?
I was.
Yeah. When I think of Lansing, I just think of, you know, downtown.
I'm probably 500 yards from where I was born.
That was a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So where was that?
From West Saginaw.
Okay.
You know where All Star Bowling Alley is?
Yes, I do.
Right across the road.
Oh, is that where you live?
Mm-hmm.
I go by there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the back with Grand Ledge a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I'm going to say, when next time I go by, I'll take a look.
Okay. Red Brick House.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the south side of the road, right across from Blue Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
Right across there. And then the first house west of that was my mother and dad's house, and that's where I was born.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Well, how many people in this day and age are still near where they were born?
I sure am not.
No, you're not.
No. So their family was all from the area, little towns outside of Lansing, and they were all farmers for the most part?
Immediate family.
Okay. How far back do they go around here?
Go around? How far back?
Yeah, like your grandparents?
Were they from?
My grandparents, one of them was from Lake Odessa, and the other one was from Portland.
Oh, really? So you go far back in this area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was also people out in Kansas and England.
Uh-huh.
My brother's wife just did
a genealogy?
Check that, and they go to Kansas and all that stuff.
Oh, great.
She just came out with a book.
So you can trace it back to England. You can trace some of your family back to England. Oh, that's wonderful.
Exciting to do.
That's her goal in life, to do that.
Oh, that's wonderful, though. We're trying to do that right now, too, with my husband's family.
Should have done it 10 years ago when, like, my mother and father were
dying. Could have given more information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Better late than never.
When did the first, was it Abes that you're talking about, the Abes family? Yes. When did they first come over from England? But it was a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It was in the 1800s.
In the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Great. And so you went to school in Lansing?
Yes.
Did you go through high school?
Well, I went to a small one-room schoolhouse.
Oh.
Which is on the corner of Canal and Saginaw, fire department. There's fire department there, and the schoolhouse used to be there.
Sure, right where the top of the fire department is?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
There was a one-room schoolhouse there.
One-room schoolhouse. My mother was the school director, and I was the janitor.
Your mother was the school director at the one-room schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. And I used to go down there like on Sunday night and build a fire and clean the toilets, and they have chemical toilets to put water and stuff in. Well, when I first got going, we had the outside.
How old were you when you went?
Was a janitor?
When you were?
Nine and ten.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to school there too?
Yeah. Till the eighth grade, and then I went After that, I came into West Union in Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a parking center now.
And I went to Central.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When did you graduate from Central?
I was in 1942. And then Central changed to Lansing Tech.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a beautiful building.
And I graduated. It was also with Sexton because I was in a trade class.
Oh, sure.
So I say I graduated from Central, Lansing Tech.
And Sexton.
And Sexton.
All three.
Sure.
What kind of technical program was it at Sexton that you went to?
I was taking drafting.
Drafting. That was like a vocational program?
Vocational.
Yeah. Did you get any other schooling besides that? Yeah, besides after you graduated from Sexton?
No.
No, that was it.
For the work field.
Then you went right into
it. I was going to go as a draftsman, and I found out they didn't make any money.
Oh, is that right? Oh.
So I started out in 1944, hired out at Rio as a sweeper.
1944 as a sweeper at Rio.
And you were just, what, 18 or 19 then?
Yeah, 18.
18.
You didn't go into the war. You weren't in the army.
No.
Serving
at that. You wasn't old enough, probably, yeah.
No, I was, but I had a leg that was badly burnt when I was about 7 years old.
Didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were. I wanted to go, but I was afraid. They were afraid because it has a lot of scar tissue on it that they wouldn't be able to,
That you might be in their hospital more than you'd be out in the field.
Yeah, which I don't think was true. But
how did you happen to burn it?
Well, we had a dog, which was a very fat dog. Back in those days, we had a lot of woodchucks around, and the dog had been digging up a woodchuck back in the field, and he chewed the dog up pretty bad. But he finally ended up killing the woodchuck. So we had an old brown one morning stove setting outdoors, and we used to burn our peepers and stuff in like that. So I put the woodchuck in it, and I siphoned the gasoline out of my father's car in my sister's play cups, carried it out and poured it up.
Put it on there.
And the old farmer matches, I scratched it on the side. And I had coveralls on. Actually, they were coveralls and buttoned up in front, just one piece. And I was saturated in gasoline.
And you couldn't get that coverall off quick enough, probably.
Well, no, you couldn't. And I started to run towards the house, which is a bad thing. And my older brother tripped me and rolled me
over.
And he put part of it out. And my father was coming up with a few horses, was dragging. And he grabbed me and dumped me a horse dog. So
I would be saving your life, both of those actions.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And then, at one time, my heel was right up against my hip, and they were talking about cutting the cords in my legs to straighten the leg out. And my mother wouldn't let them do that. So in about a year's time, I got to the point where I could put my foot on the ground and just have a toe on the ground. And I can operate.
Wow. Mr.
Ace,
I'm
going
to
shut
the door.
Why don't we move?
Move like
No,
that's
okay. There's a lot of background noise coming from out there. We can move the chair out of the room.
No,
we're good. So you started as a sweeper after you'd gotten all this training to be a draftsman.
True.
At the Rio. I guess I have to ask you why.
I took any job that I could get into.
Okay, on the ground floor, literally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, I don't know how.
And did it matter that it was Rio?
Yes, my father worked there.
Your father worked there.
Mother worked there.
Your father and your brother?
Mother.
His mother.
Mother. Oh, what did they both do?
Oh, my father worked in the engineering department, mechanic, was in the engineering department. My mother worked there at rockets, building rockets and bomb fuses.
Oh, she was a World
War II.
Navy
Department worker.
And then after that, she worked in one more.
She did.
So it was a real family, so it was natural for you to start there.
Right, and my grandfather worked in the heat treating department.
Mm-hmm.
And I had brothers. And
your grandfather must have started right almost from the beginning.
That's what I was wondering, how long he worked.
I really don't know whether he went there first or not. He had worked in a shop in Sunfield.
Mm-hmm.
And so he...
Oh, he started as a blacksmith. Oh, that's interesting.
And my father worked in a blacksmith shop also.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to Wardville and worked in the heat treating department there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my grandfather came after.
Oh, I see, after your father did too.
Mm-hmm.
And all this time that they were working at Rio, did they still live on farms too? So they would work at home on the farm and work in the...
Well, my father did, and my grandfather did.
He didn't.
Because he had
a blacksmith shop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you started in Rio because of the whole family.
Yeah.
And you started on the ground floor.
Do you remember how much you made when you started out?
55 cents an hour.
And were you able to get overtime or anything like that?
Not in sweeping, no.
Uh-huh. Okay, I just wondered.
Did you sweep a department, an area?
Yep.
Which one?
Repair floor.
In the repair floor. Okay. How long did you stay there doing a sweep?
About 3 months.
Okay, and then you moved up. Then you started moving up. What did you do next?
I drove trucks off the assembly line out of the parking lot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that an increase in pay as you went up?
Oh, yeah.
What were you making during the trucks off the assembly
line? I don't know. I can't tell you now.
Uh-huh.
I've got the paychecks.
Oh, yeah. You saved those.
Well,
isn't that interesting?
Huh. So that was the next thing. And that was just making sure that they could go from point A to point B at that point, right?
Well, I drove. You bring them in a... They come off the assembly line, and then you start them up, and you kind of put them somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you either drive them into a stall where the mechanic has to work on them, or if they're okay, then you drive them out in the parking lot. Or you drive them around to what they call a radio room. Okay? We were mostly building military trucks. In the radio room is... You drive the truck in there and they run a test on it, run the engine and stuff, to see that the electrical system is not giving off signals that the enemy can pick up.
That is interesting.
So, yeah, I was driving trucks to off the assembly line. I would take them out and take them to wherever they were and then walk back and pick up another truck.
Where was the radio room located? Someplace right near where you drove off the end of the assembly line? Or was it over in a different location entirely?
It was probably 50 yards, 60 yards away from the assembly line.
Was still in the Baker Street, Washington area?
Right. Okay. The repair floor was in that area, and also the radio room.
Hmm.
Right.
Then they were ready to be loaded on boxcars or whatever, the flat cars and shipped out. The railroad used to go right through there, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they had to go out on road tests, too.
Oh.
Road tests. I did that, too.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
So the next thing was driving, and then how long did you stay at that?
I was probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So then you moved on to something else?
I worked on it, went on to a summer line.
Oh, then you were in the assembly line. Okay. So that was like 1945 that you started the assembly line. Okay. And where did you work on the line?
On final assembly. I graduated from driving the trucks to being a mechanic to get the vehicle started.
Oh, that was your job on final?
Mm-hmm.
Was to get it started.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that the engine was run?
Sure, because they'd have gas lines maybe somebody didn't have time to tighten up and had a leak or water leak or something like that.
Did you have to identify at that point what was the problem?
Yes.
Okay. So that was, he was the,
and
you, always, you had to repair it too.
Oh.
So this is a very serious and important job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we, trying to think, what? I lost it.
Oh, okay.
Was there a production quota too for that?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. At one time, we were running about 40 trucks a day. At one point, we were close to 100.
Were these all government trucks?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the line of just putting out those government trucks
for
the oil?
No, not necessarily, because every once in a while they would stick a commercial vehicle.
Okay.
Which is real clean. We had two different military trucks that we went for that.
Three different models?
Three different models.
Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while there'd be this clunker coming through, right?
I didn't think so. I thought that was a beautiful thing. I just saw it.
What's that?
This olive drab and all of a sudden, you saw a green one on a red truck.
Oh, so here
was. That was the two basic colors that we would put out.
Oh, thing. Really? Green and red?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a nice change to see your red coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And were they different mechanically too? I mean, would the army, the military truck be more heavy duty?
Yes. You're talking about military truck is six-wheel drive, and the commercial vehicle was only two-wheel.
Okay. Oh, sure.
Is there anything sensitive, you know, in terms of military secrets or anything for what you did with those trucks? No. They didn't say talk about this or don't talk about that or anything.
Not at that point. Well, they had designated areas you couldn't go into. You had bomb fuse and rocket departments you're not supposed to go into.
Mm.
That's where your mom worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And later on, I ended up with clients so I could remember.
Mm.
So, but,
did you work with a group of guys that did basically the same thing you did?
There were three of us.
There were three people who did this job on the final assembly. Okay. So
and
it was
this
a group
was
of three.
Day shift, did they still have the three shifts when you were
No, they only had two.
To two shifts at this point. But the war was over, basically, so.
Well,
no, it wasn't.
No, because when I first started there, we only had one shift,
mm-hmm.
and then they ended up putting two shifts on.
They never did go to three?
Never did go
to three. Mm-hmm. Okay. That graveyard shift, they used to call that, dude.
Well, it was basically the same because if a lot of percentage of the people wouldn't show up on the night, the afternoon shift. So you might be expecting to work 8 hours a day, and you might end up working a double shift. So you could work 16. And go home and get some rest and come back here and be working next morning.
Well, you must have felt like you lived there on those occasions.
Well, this gets back to those things because I was running a fire at that time too.
So you're trying to squeeze all that in, and the crops aren't going to wait, are they, sometimes?
Yeah. So, I lost a lot of crops.
Because you couldn't get them in?
Yeah, my alliance was to reel first. Those two people who were supporting me and all those things to the war effort and everything else. So if I couldn't get my crops in, it's just like a favor.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye, good work, goodbye. Yeah.
What'd you grow?
Corn.
Grain,
wheat.
Grains,
basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Grains.
Did you have any livestock too?
One time, while I was still home, we had about 7 or 8 bad cattle and horses. We did our farming, of course.
Oh, you said your dad drove up on a with
mm-hmm.
the horses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It must have been, you know, I'm just thinking, I grew up in a big city, so this is all
mm-hmm.
a little strange to me, but to go from a factory in the day to go to a farm seems like a real contrast in your life, you know, to go from one extreme to another almost.
It really was because when I started out, I was still walking behind a single plow.
Mm-hmm.
To plow, you had the team horses.
Yeah.
And you go down to the end and have to let them rest and then turn on the back.
Oh.
You did all the cultivating. You had all of the, what's called fitting the ground, which was dragging and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the corn came out and stuff, we cultivated with horses and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then turn around and go ahead and make trucks, right?
Yeah. And then the knives, too.
Yeah, I worked on a thrashing machine one summer before I started working at Wheel. And I used to do all the stuff, stack hay, binders to bind up the straw and wheat and to throw it in the thrashing machine.
That's hard work too, isn't it?
Hard work? No, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, is it really? I'm thinking of all day long.
Oh, well, yeah, but you're young, you know.
You're strong, yeah, when you're young.
The hard thing that I really got into, but I loved that too, was turning the grain machine to the grainer and dumping it in each step. These big 2-bushel sacks, you know, that's 120 pounds, put up on your shoulder.
Oh.
And carry it to and dump it. And it was just a steady stream of people, guys doing that, maybe four or five guys.
Uh-huh. We're probably kidding each other about how I'm faster than you are. That makes it
go to each
other. Not towards the end of the day.
No.
Because I was about 165 pounds and just solid muscle.
Wow.
And I just love that kind of work. Mm-hmm. Any hard work.
So let's get back to the final assembly. You worked with two other guys. It was a group of three.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a supervisor? Or did you all... who'd you work under, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm not trying to think. I don't really remember.
You don't remember. But you had somebody that you had to answer to.
The fellow was saying...
inspectors, maybe?
Roy Archer, I guess, is what's the fellow's name. He was over the assembly line at the time.
Okay, so whoever was head of the whole assembly line process was the person you answered to?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a good
had group leaders live, but group leaders basically all they did was fill it in while somebody was off sick or...
Right, so to pick up the slack if somebody was out.
Mm-hmm. Which I ended up, I was at one of those group leaders.
Uh-huh. So you had to know what you were doing in a lot of different places to do job.
Yeah. I could, at one time, they got down to 6 people on the whole assembly line. I was one of the 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do any operation from starting them up, painting, or whatever, air piping, anything you want to do. I could build a whole truck myself.
But there aren't many people who can say that today, I think.
Oh, no, because you learn this one little boring job and you do that 8 hours a day or whatever, week in, week out, year in, year out, and you don't see any part of your job. Might have been a little more satisfying because you got to see the final product. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's job satisfaction.
Anytime you're learning, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So my philosophy was you can get to a point where you're not learning and don't change jobs.
That's
interesting. I do.
Was this a good group to work with? Did you enjoy the group of people there that you work with on the line?
As long as they do the job.
Right. Okay. And you didn't have to pick up the slack for them? That was...
Sometimes, but I just didn't like sloppy work, that's all.
Mm-hmm. For the most part, were they good workers?
Very good. It's pretty surprised how many women were on the assembly line.
Even
is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Was that because of the war or just
because
of the war?
Uh-huh.
And they were okay too? And you don't have to say anything?
Sure.
You don't have to change your answer because of us?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Okay. They were good?
Yes.
You don't remember any pressures on them because there were women working there or any problems that they encountered?
No.
Of course, during the war, everybody was united in this effort. So
the only
problems
I ever heard of concerning women was this fellow that used to chew the back of one's gut.
And they didn't like it.
And they finally ended up with him a box of sawdust. So
that solved that problem. I don't blame them. My dad talked about women who still wanted to wear their rings and jewelry and running machines, and he had problems getting them to realize they can't work at this big time in the ring because they'd get their hand caught.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused some problems for a while.
They taped a lot of them.
Did they?
Oh, that's interesting.
lot of assembly line and stuff like that, they wore gloves anyway.
And the protection to keep the hair back out of the way of the machines, those hats with the net at the back. Mm-hmm.
Did they stay on after the war?
Some of the women, not the women.
Right, most of them were.
And the electrical, if they did the electrical wiring and stuff like that, they kept the women up there for that.
Mm-hmm.
And for doing wiring, things like that. And,
those were maybe their smaller hands.
Lawnmowers, yeah, because women are a lot faster with their hands than women.
Oh.
Let's face it. And doing technical work and things like that.
Uh-huh. I know a lot of them were in the lawnmower department, because my mother was there, receiving the lawnmower.
So how long did you last at this job?
That job?
Mm-hmm.
Probably, I don't know, probably 3 months or something like that.
Oh, is that all 3 months on this one? And then?
Back water on the assembly line.
Oh, still on the assembly line, okay.
Well, I spent 15 years, I think, 14 years on the
line.
In different places on the line?
Yeah, gradually working that place, way back towards the end of it.
Okay.
Towards the beginning of the process.
Right.
What did you like the best on the assembly line? Which position? Or maybe you liked it all?
I probably was more interested in test driving and things like that. I was a test driver.
Mm-hmm. When was this also while you were on the assembly line, you were test driving, or was that before you started on the assembly?
At one time, was after the war and everything, and were doing military vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on what they call the rolls, which was on the end of the assembly line. And they were big, large rollers, and you drive the trucks on those, and you chain down the back so it wouldn't go, and then you shift through all the gears and stuff like that, and get it up to 35 or 40 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit there and let it run. You were in the truck, checking all the gauges and all that kind of stuff, and you let it run for probably 10 or 15 minutes, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, make sure everything is all right. And you're writing all the time while you're doing this. And I felt like that on assembly line the best of anything that came there.
You had a list of things you had to check for each vehicle, make sure that they were working order?
Yeah, they had a worksheet.
A worksheet, yeah.
And I had a lot of pride in doing that because we knew that was either going to go to a repair station or it's going to go right out into the parking lot for delivery or shipping department, which is right next door where the vehicle's down and boxed it up to ship them.
And you're the one that made that decision?
Yes.
I wonder if in the tearing down and the boxing up so they could be shipped out, if that ever caused any problems if the trucks didn't work once they reassembled them or wherever. Or were they so well made that they would tear down easily?
Only in one instance I know of, and I'm trying to think of the name of the country, that when they got the boxes with the vehicles in them, they were no tested and everything else before they ever went into the boxes. But they did run into an assembly problem when they got them into the work.
I was wondering about that. Would somebody in a foreign country know how to put these things together?
They're supposed to have sent somebody along. In fact, I almost ended up doing that.
In some black truck?
Well, I found out what they were doing is they didn't have any docks or anything else. They didn't have any buildings to build them in. And they were just more in this channel. And with a big boom, they were dropping the big boxes, controlling it and containing all the trucks. Out on the deserts, the camels come along and hooking onto them and pulling them out. And they'd get them out so far away, and then all of a sudden they would take the boxes apart and assemble them with sand and everything else below them.
And that's what I was kind of thinking when you said they dumped them in the desert, all the sand going in the parts and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. How effective.
So Randy follows her man.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I don't think of the name of the place that it was. They asked me if I would go over there and get something set up. So, but it has nothing to do with Sunderland.
No, no, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
Box them up. How big a box are you talking about? How many pieces did they break a truck down into?
Yeah, but you know, they could put a whole truck in a box that was twice the size of this one. Mm-hmm. This dimension here, but longer.
And they probably put they would use cranes to pick that up on the ships and things like that.
The chassis would be one part, I suppose. They wouldn't take that apart, would they?
They took everything apart.
Isn't that amazing? You work so hard to put it all together, then you have to take it all apart.
Well, they took the axles off and everything else because that would
make it that much harder.
Yeah. And actually, the boxes would probably not full width is what this is. Just enough to put the width of the cab was the largest part.
Mm-hmm.
And they would take the axles and set them in racks and stuff in there, and the cab would fit in a certain place, and the chassis would set in a certain place. And
now they had to do this for the trade regulations for the foreign countries. They wouldn't accept their trucks unless
some
of their local workers were able to.
Mm-hmm. And they were loaded in the box cars too, so
you
know, these boxes were loaded in the box cars.
Hmm.
My older brother worked in the export business.
Oh, he did?
In the shop.
In the light department.
Is that late? We have to get a hold of him. Mm-hmm. We have to talk to him.
He's in Florida.
Oh, all right. We'll have to wait till he gets back.
Oh, is he the one that called us? Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
We haven't been doing this since before the holidays, and I have to reprogram my mind to thinking about the folks we've talked to.
Was that you were on the assembly line, so 15 years, you said, from like around 45 to 60.
About 14, 15 years.
We've talked to a guy who did time and motion stuff for Rio.
Time what?
Time and motion studies.
Efficiency expert type of thing.
Right.
Time study.
Mm-hmm.
With a little watch.
Mm-hmm. Right. They do that stuff for you? Yeah. Was there any change in that time in terms of the pace of the work that had to be done at Rio?
Well, when I first started in there, it was all piecework.
Right, that's right. That changed in 46. Right. That's right.
And then they went to all of work.
In 46, right. There was a strike because of that, wasn't there?
What?
Wasn't there a strike because of that?
Oh, we had lots of strikes.
There were a lot of strikes, weren't there, right after the war? How did that affect your work? Were you off from work a lot during these, like the steel strike, and the coal strike, and the railroad strike?
Really, I wasn't, because when they had the strikes, see, I was a field service mechanic and a lot of other things.
So they kind of needed you someplace there.
So they would send me out on the road.
Oh. Plants closed, they send you out. Right.
Yeah, but you had to have union approval to do it. See. So I would be out on the road fixing trucks or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back into town, then I had to do picket duty, yes. But
picket duty for the strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one time when I was in the bus department, building buses, inner city buses, they took me in to finish up the buses, because if they didn't get it done, then they would have lost the contract.
So they were behind schedule or something?
Behind delivery, yeah.
I can't remember whether I read this somewhere or somebody else told us that the switch from the piecework to the hourly wage was as a result of a strike, a specific strike that was a wildcat.
Yeah.
Was it a wildcat strike?
Yeah. How long was that? What time duration are we speaking about?
I haven't heard very much about it. That's why I was hoping Mr. Ames could tell us a little bit about it.
Wildcat strike.
Yeah. So some of the guys just were fed up with peace? Was it because they were speeding people up, or?
No, I don't think they had much beating up and people and stuff like that, but they were abusing them because piecework was a thing. If you worked on a assembly line, you really would stick to it, but they also had these little sub-assembly lines where these people were making all the money.
Okay.
Because the company allowed him so much for building up, like I was down at air piping, putting all the air brake systems and stuff in them. And you got so much increase in doing it. Mm-hmm. You could do a lot more than what the time study guy. You'd slow down when the time study man.
Right.
So if you really work, you could have the money that you're allowed to make by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So you have 2 o'clock, 2 hours in the afternoon that you could do anything you wanted to do. And
so a lot of people could make more money by continuing to work for the extra hours.
But you didn't dare turn it in because the minute you went down and turned it in,
the time study guy would be there.
And he'd up your production.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
They didn't listen to time study.
Oh, he worked with them too?
Yeah.
Oh.
So they were nice guys. A lot of people hated them and stuff like that. But you could always slow down just enough so that you could get your study done. Even after piecework went out, there was still time study.
Right. That's right. So, they wanted to set quotas for how much you could do with a certain 8-hour day or whatever.
Or make your job more efficient, less wasted motion. So supposedly.
You take the laziest person there is in the whole place and you put him on a job. And he's going to find a shortcut to doing the job.
Easy.
And all you got to do is be smart enough to put him on and want to see what he does. Because he's going to do it the easiest way to do it.
But so there were some members of the line, some of the workers that didn't like the difference that some people can make a lot and some people couldn't make a lot with the piece. Is that it? And that was the problem for why they were well kept?
One of
the
basic problems. Yeah.
So it wasn't equal. People couldn't take advantage of the system equally.
So the Wildcat strike ended up, it turned out to be everybody had now an wage.
Was that in 4 to 6?
Yeah.
How long was, what was the time, what was the duration of the strike? Was it just a short time, a week or 2 weeks, or, you think?
I was thinking it was probably about a month, something like that.
It was a month.
Okay.
Did you participate in that?
Yes, I did.
You did, in the Wildcat?
Yeah. Cause you were union, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Were you union, so you had to. Yep. Do your picket duty and what?
I had a close shot, and that was another thing too, was close shot too. Mm-hmm. Because it burnt me to see somebody was getting all the benefits and stuff.
Without work doing them.
Right.
Yeah, paying dues. Yeah. But the union wasn't behind it. It was Wildcat. The union didn't call it. The workers just walked out, right? Maybe they didn't want to credit for it, right?
Well, you're saying that maybe... Maybe the union inspired this, are you saying?
I don't say they inspired it, but they knew about it.
Right, and they weren't saying no, but they weren't saying yes.
People weren't just going to walk off the job.
Without some support.
Right.
Yeah.
Without knowing that they wouldn't.
A little consolation.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
So.
They kind of knew the union would back them up and keep their jobs for them.
Yes.
We've heard both people in favor of the peace and against it. In favor of the arrow and the person, both sides of the story. Did you think it was an improvement to change to hourly, or what was your?
Depends on.
I mean, you obviously went out on strike, so you wanted to change it at the time.
Well, it's just not really, because I was drawing good money.
You were out. But you went out because the rest of the guys went out?
And if you're union, you're pretty well due.
Well, it's a close shop, right?
Yeah, you're going to be sure.
You're going to do that. Or something.
Did it hurt you in terms of how much you made?
Lost 4 weeks. Four
no, I know, besides the strike. I mean, you know, in the long run, just to switch from piece to hourly.
I think any strike hurts everything. No, because I can still put out production and stuff like that.
So do okay.
The only thing that hurt you is they kept pushing you to put more production out, and you didn't get any more money.
Right. So. That's a complaint we've heard from some of the other people too. If I work hard, I know I can make the money.
Right.
And I don't
have a certain amount of people who aren't going to work, period.
Yeah. And they're making the same money you are. That's.
They're just there from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 at night. But it's people who are willing to put out the extra effort and stuff like that, I think they should have gotten paid up to
them. Yeah. There, and there were a lot of other strikes, too, you were saying.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Well, I think, say that proper negotiators there, but we never got to that point where it's right.
So you don't think that the grievance system worked really well? You know, people had grievances or problems that didn't...
Well, whenever they had a contract coming up, they negotiated and stuff, a lot of those grievances and stuff and giving them away to get something else.
Oh.
So how important is it?
Right. Now, I've also, this I know I've read from my own work on the Rio, that the Rio local was not considered as important as time went on as some of the other locals because of the small, the shop was small. So they were overshadowed by, you know, some of the other factories. So they weren't considered as important.
Well, it's still, you still have that thing. Also, you know, Ford, General Motors,
right,
you know, all the
power.
Battles,
yeah.
Because you have one basic company that's going to strike, and that company is going to set the precedent for the rest of it. You still have it.
Yeah.
Most of the strikes that were at real Russian over wages and things like that is basically over conditions or grievances or whatever, but...
Like interpersonal, like so-and-so didn't get along, it wasn't getting a fair shake from somebody else, that kind of thing.
Right.
You mentioned the conditions when we were outside.
Mm-hmm.
They were also heard from other people that they were not modern.
What kind of problems did you see due to the condition problems? Did the line break down a lot? Was the equipment you had to use substandard?
Oh, yeah. The line broke down a lot, that's true. And ventilation stuff, you know, all these trucks were starting up here, no fans, no ventilation, and anything.
Did that make people sick, breathing in those fumes?
I would assume some, yeah.
No ventilation?
Some people get accustomed to that. I think carbon monoxide and...
Huh.
We're talking about gasoline emissions and so on. Make sure you know, like, nice.
You know, it would seem like, well, the union, somebody's going to be around, somebody from the health board or somebody, it seems like they'd be around checking. But maybe that wasn't a consideration in the late, in the mid-40s.
No, not
until
the 60s and 70s,
yeah.
Occupational Health and Safety Act, those kind of
came
things.
Came along
later,
yeah.
I mean, they were instituted, there weren't as many inspectors, came around as often until more recently.
Not that I saw. The only one you do, if you had a problem, you could go to your supervisor and tell them about it, which didn't mean to come about it.
May not go anywhere from there. He could report it, but they may not do anything about it.
No, nobody did anything about it. The only one that could get anything done was out of the
Oh, really?
She said that was unhealthy. Yeah.
And then they would listen to her? They might change a machine
sometimes,
or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Did you have machines that were unsafe to operate?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because I worked in a shop where there was personal hazard to your hands and your
they
face.
They tried to make it as safe as what they wanted to. Like, my mother worked in a press room also.
Did she?
And they had the straps around them, but they didn't break.
Supposedly to pull your hands back,
right.
But...
Right. Well, in most of the accident stuff in Rio, as far as I know, and I worked also at the restaurant, was because a fellow Western arrested me. See, the assembly line got off the production piecework, which is still with piecework and press rooms and stuff like that.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, that's
and these people would tie a press down. In other words, you had two buttons you had to put your hands on. But they would lock the buttons down so that machine was just going to continue to go.
Oh.
And like they were making lawnmower blades, this guy had a 20-foot frame thing, and he just pushed on lawnmowers,
the blades?
Yeah. He just pushed those right straight through, and some of the blades come out the other end, or that long, and some were that long, and all different sizes. But he also had one thumb left. All his fingers cut.
Because he was shoving that sheet metal through the fingers at Unseen.
Oh my God.
So, but he was running production. Back to Mark.
Oh gosh. It's not worth your fingers. Not from my perspective.
That's what I worked with Punch Crisis. Oh. So I don't know what you're talking about.
So part of it was just the way that people used them too.
Yeah.
And the, when would somebody would be misusing a machine like that? The foreman wouldn't notice it, or he wanted to make production so he didn't really care, or?
Well, I was the inspector in the press room one time, and of course I. The bit that you turn down whole strip boats of these wagons that this guy came up with all
great. They all have to go to salvage or something.
Right. Then the supervisor would get interested in it. So I'll tell you that.
Because that was hurting his production record.
Right. I got all this crap, what am I going to do with it? So.
Right.
So the fellow who ran the press and did it all, he had to sort them all out. And then after he got done with it, I checked for balance and all that stuff.
So Rio didn't do any real significant modernizing of its plant or equipment or anything of that while you were working on the line?
The Rio?
Yeah.
Presto was pretty, they had gotten to the point where we were doing progressive presses and things like that.
So they did a little bit of updating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the line that you worked on before?
You're talking about the assembly?
Yeah, the assembly. No, not a whole lot. I mean, it was. It wouldn't have been all that different walking in when you first started from when you left. 14, 15 years.
No.
It wouldn't have looked all that different.
But we've heard that not much money was put back into keeping her shop up or updating it.
Right.
We had more sublines and stuff coming in.
Okay.
They also had waterfall spray booth on there.
What was the waterfall spray booth? So keep clean parts or?
No, what it did is the frames came down this assembly line, mm-hmm. and you had to paint the frame, which I did that also.
Spray painting?
Yeah, you had a lady on the other side who had a spray gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a spray gun and it runs through the tanks and stuff. So he just had chimneys to spray. And we started on it. I would spray the opposite side, the inside of the frame and stuff. And she would spray all the this side, so we were shooting at both of these.
Did you wear any masks on
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You had grease and stuff on her face and so you walk on.
So you did have some kind of protection against the paint or the fumes?
Yeah, and also this waterfalls. Came down and also captured with this great paint.
Oh, all the particles that are in the air.
Oh, that's interesting.
Was that like a big filtration kind of system in a way?
Yeah, well, no. It actually, all it did was anything that was leaving the booth and would have normally left the booth ended up in this waterfall.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really
but
interesting.
Inside the booth itself,
it was everywhere.
Yeah. And that's one of the complaints I had about Linda. She sprayed me more than she did.
I was going to ask if you ever sprayed each other, you know, go home out of your
house. Then it went to heating lights and stuff, after all the water heat lamps and stuff.
To dry the paint.
And then they had what they call a turnover. And they took the frame up and turned it over. Sprayed it again, the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only operating turnover, it was chain operating, that I ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that door would open through the gable air and the air.
Speaking of ventilation, huh?
Duffy. I think we'll cook our visitor.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can take the cold better than I can take the heat.
After 1960 or so, because you said you were on the assembly line for 15 years.
Okay, I was on the assembly line, but I was also working in the bus department. The buses, the interstate city buses. I was also test driving trucks for military and a commercial boat. And I was what they call a rewrite person that coordinated between the military inspectors and stuff. If they drove the truck and they found something that they didn't figure was unacceptable or whatever, or they didn't know, then I would get with the government people and we'd take the truck out for a ride and decide one way or another.
So you took it out on the road, like around Lansing?
About 59. And then once in a while, you had one that came off the center line that went 50 miles, or another one that went 100, and one time we were doing 500 miles.
Wow. This is what you did after you left the line? Was test driving with the military stuff?
So you would drive all over the state of Michigan then to do the 500-mile tests, or you just did a lot of state. Out of state? Oh, isn't that interesting?
Wherever you want to go.
pick a point on the map, 500 miles from here, right?
And I was thinking, too, maybe different terrain just to see what I'm going to do.
Right.
And I worked in repair for and what they call special equipment, which was on a commercial vehicle, if they wanted fifth wheel, you know what fifth wheel is?
You probably do, right?
Where the semi comes up and it vacuums.
Hasn't gone back to it. You've seen them on fifth wheel campers and that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay. I would do that, or if they had, my specialty was electrical work. If they wanted a red flashing light on a top or anything that had to do with electrical. Turn signals and whatever, because turn signal was optional at that time.
That would have been 46, 47 someplace. You talked about the turn signals being optional. Interesting.
No,
I wouldn't think about
it. This is back in the 50s.
In the 50s, okay.
I would say.
Trying to think when turn signals came out, really.
Definitely. I've always
I know they, what were they? Turn signals for residential or for just a car, what was that, maybe late 50s?
I would think so.
Because we used to stick our hand up.
Right, I do remember this. From my childhood.
And the joke used to be, is she signaling to turn or drying her fingernail polish?
Oh, gosh.
Still do that one more cycle occasionally.
So, let me just make sure I think it's clear that after 1960 you mostly did test driving outside of the shop. You took the military vehicles out and test drove those. How long did you do that for?
I believe about 2 years.
Okay. Then what? Then.
Well, was this after the Korean War then with military contracts went down? Oh, you're talking 60,
yeah.
Not 50. I misunderstood.
Somewhere around there, I don't know
where it is.
Then I went to
building
buses.
Okay.
Where were those built?
In a place they call 3A. I don't know if you ever remember that. It was in a building between assembly line. It was in one of the pews, the bomb.
Oh, over in the corner, Washington Baker area? That's where the Navy Department had been bomb fusing before, and then it went to buses. Oh, okay.
That's how you worked on the city. It was the city buses, right?
They got the contract for the city buses.
Intercity buses.
Intercity, okay. So how long did you work for Rio? Then, you know, when?
28 years.
28 years. So that means till.
You went there in what, 44?
Right. So till 60.
Close to the end, in a way.
Help me show. Till 44, it's 28 years, so it was the early 70s that you were working.
And so you
were working? Yeah, I worked commercial engineering garage. Uh-huh. And I did test driving, and I was just a mechanic. And towards the last end, I could see that they weren't going to go anywhere.
So it was your early 70s already, yeah, 44.
Maybe.
44, you worked in
72.
Yeah.
We used to build the vehicles, the prototypes and all that up, and then we took them out and test drive them. And all of a sudden, they decided that they weren't going to run a test program anymore, that they were going to let the people who bought the trucks test them out and report back to them.
Oh.
So I left there and went to military engineering.
They had military contracts all the way through.
Yes, all the way through.
But weren't there times when the contracts, you were between contracts and the work went down? People were laid off?
Could be, I don't know.
You didn't personally experience that. Yeah, okay.
I think I had 4 weeks or so from longest I was off.
In all that time?
Oh, is that right? Because we've talked to people that, you know, they've mentioned that when the contracts were gone and fulfilled, and then the work was until the next contract came in. Well, that's good that you didn't have to go through that.
Well, they were, it seems like something would come up, like, okay, we're going to get buses, you know,
mm-hmm.
or we're going to, we've got field work to do, and so they would send me out. I was all over the United States. So all the time on basis doing what they call retrofits and so on, something that they had improved on and wanted to incorporate into the vehicle segment. And I'm doing the military base, and sometimes you're talking about pallets and trucks you're going to have to work on. You know.
Oh, is that right?
And,
by yourself?
No, there was a crew normally of about 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, Redstone Arsenal. That one, you know, all those military bases in Nebraska, places I never heard of.
That must have been interesting.
They had stockpiles of military trucks and stuff like that.
So you really became a specialist in these military vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and the servicing and the engineering and all of that
yeah.
for the company.
Yeah.
And you did that right up to close to your leaving?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did, yes.
Did you retire from there, or did you leave because you...
No, I left. Actually, what happened is the military engineering was purchased by American Motors. You know? So I had the option to stay with Diamond Wheel or going with American Motors.
What, with American Motors? In 1972?
Did you do that because you... As you mentioned, you could sense that things were coming to an end and as far as the wheel was concerned?
That bothered me because they were leaving the commercial people. And like, okay, if you put an axle in a vehicle, at one time we would test it to make sure it worked before it went through the buyer.
Right.
Okay. As it was, they would sell it to the people, the truck, the vehicle truck. And if there was a problem with the axle or something like that, they would come back to the manufacturer, Rockwell, whatever, whoever did the axle. And I didn't think that was the way to do it. I thought you should get into a truck, and if you're going to build a truck, you should test it and make sure it's going to be all right before you pass it on to the consumers, which they weren't doing. So I said, okay. If you're not going to do a test work or any improvement on it, I'm going to go to the military engineering because they're doing all the tools.
Test it.
So that's what I did.
They're putting out a better product, and we felt better about being part of it.
Right.
I'd like to go back just a minute and ask. You mentioned earlier that your mother worked in the factory, and what did you say she did?
She was with the Navy Department.
Bomb fuses.
Bomb fuses.
And then after the war, she went into the lawnmower department?
Right.
How long did she stay at Mill?
Till Munger, if she went out. So they also built in place.
Mid-50s, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
And then they built what?
They also built paths, swing sets, and all that stuff.
Oh! Okay. Yeah, I think somebody must have mentioned that to us. The PAL swing sets, they made that in where they had been making lawnmowers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's neat. So did she retire then from here, or was she there close to the end, too?
Well, she was laid off when they did away with the lawnmower, so yes.
Oh, she was laid off when the lawnmower division went down. Oh, I see.
So I don't think she got a retirement.
That must have been hard after 28 years to leave.
Yes.
Especially in the way that you had to, because you didn't think that the company was doing its job properly anymore.
So we've talked to a lot of people who felt job satisfaction, and to finally come to the place where you couldn't feel that good about your product, that's got to be a bad feeling.
I did get up until that point, until we started doing the issue, it was really, you know, depending on people. I worked on some of the trucks afterwards with they would bring them in and I would be coming up on the engines and things like that. You know, we would get them, this is a oil company, I'm trying to think what the name of it is. The engine, we would install it. And after we installed it, we required them to come in for inspection every 30,000 miles. So I would set all the valves and do the engine tuning and so on and so forth on it, and send it back out to Kinley and get it in the truck. And I thought, I don't know what that guy does with that truck, whether he's misusing it or whatever. And why should I feel proud about it? I don't want to do it as a mechanic.
You know?
And prior to that, we would run a truck 100,000 miles. Bring it in and we tear it completely down, check for everything from there.
Mm-hmm.
Engine and all works. So we would know where the wear patterns were, what was satisfactory and what wasn't. And so we'd know when we designed a new truck.
What you could do better.
What we could do better.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting.
Gee, I think that's wonderful. It's too bad they don't do that with cars.
They used to.
Did they?
Yeah.
When they made their car, they did that too? Yeah.
Up until 36?
Yeah.
They,
oh, so it was after 36. Because in Alford Ground and Proving Ground, the one time, the month that I was off, they knew I was a test driver down to unemployment office. And they wanted me to go down to Alford and drive for Oldsmobile.
Oh, Oldsmobile did it.
On the Alford track.
On the test track.
And I'm thinking, drive all the way down there and all the way back?
So you didn't go?
No, because I had family here and I had time and everything else to keep up. I just couldn't do it.
Hmm. You mentioned your family. Did your wife work also? Did she also work in the shop?
Mm-hmm.
She was on the farm doing lots of work.
No.
No? No?
She would be a mother, dad.
How many?
Two, three, four.
Four.
Okay.
Yeah, three boys and a girl.
And did you want any of them to not work in a shop?
No.
We've talked to people who said, I don't want my son working in a shop. I don't want him to be a shop rat type of thing.
No, but...
You sound like
you
had a good
experience.
Pardon me?
No, but none of them do.
Oh, really?
One boy is a head mechanic rider out here.
Rider trucks?
Hmm?
Rider truck?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
It's high, she's going to the mechanical end of it. I have one son who is a stonemason.
Wow.
I have another son who is has a sports shop up in Huntington.
Hmm.
And my daughter takes care of these two people.
Everybody's busy and active. You sound like you had a good experience, and your years at Real were good years.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't have had it if they would have wanted to go. That would have been their choice. But the plant, when I left, my us.
Not the same plant when you came here.
Yeah. I want to ask you about hunting.
Hunting.
Now, I've read lots of places that you couldn't find somebody to work at Rio during hunting season.
Pheasant and deer.
I was one of them.
You were one of them. So what did they do? Did they give you a week off or something during hunting season? Let the guys just go?
Or you just get sick?
That was the only vacation that we had.
Oh, that was the only vacation you had. They gave you the hunting season.
You didn't get a two-week vacation or a vacation pay or anything like that?
Well, yeah, we had a Christmas bonus back in those
days. Oh, you did. Right up toward the end, were you still getting that Christmas bonus?
No. No, no, no. This was way back.
In the 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
But what? Give me an idea of how many people we're talking about here on the line that would go take that week or two off.
Oh, no, I was...
You weren't there.
I remember when I
but they must have had, it must have been a significant amount.
Everybody's dad was gone.
They were all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They would either cut the line down and do inventory or something else. Oh, I thought somebody was knocking.
Just noises.
They were going to shut the line down for that week or two. That was around.
Well,
Thanksgiving.
I don't know.
You don't know.
Really, that's amazing to think of doing that. You know, that's the last thing you shut the line down. Is,
yeah.
Like,
there must have been some guys who were still there.
Oh, I was. Yeah, I think probably were. Mm-hmm. Hmm. I see.
Didn't hunt. Just a few.
It's true. And basically, all the way through all my employment is hunting's first. I mean, I'll work for you, but.
Uh-huh. Right. So you've said Rio took priority over the farm, but hunting took priority over the Rio.
We're talking about a week.
A week.
Yeah, we're only talking
that week.
Once a year, maybe. Your place, did you go pheasant hunting too in the early days?
Oh, certainly.
That used to be a big thing, pheasant hunting.
I had a nice rooster pheasant in my sights last week.
Did you?
Hunting season was over, but that's the first one that I saw in the fly. But
she couldn't pull the trigger.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I only saw two rooster pheasants out there all summer long. So they walked right across my runway. And I was out walking that day, and I could walk and charge it up. And they just were bold as a Dickinson was.
They knew you couldn't shoot them.
That was the day you started to go out, and probably an hour and a half you could have your limit. Four.
Gosh,
presents,
it's amazing they've come back. They're coming back well, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. And deer, we go deer hunting. You're lucky. I saw six deer all season this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see anywhere from 45 to 50 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and the same amount in the afternoon, mm-hmm. day after day out there.
Wow.
So we had property. Up there too.
Oh, for hunting purposes?
Mm-hmm.
How far out north?
It's Atlanta. You know where
I do know where Atlanta is.
Yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm. My mother's father had the property that when he passed away, Layton and I went together and bought the Cedar Acres.
Wow.
So
you always had a place to go during that week.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, we used to go with tents and all that kind of stuff. Now, shortly after that, we got the house trailer and put that up here.
Oh, okay.
Now we got a cabin that sleeps for two.
Oh, wow. I don't think you call it a cabin if it sleeps 14. It sounds like a house.
And a sauna.
I think.
But we're almost a year now.
And the women aren't going to go up there and tent all year round, but they will go on.
All of a sudden, we're getting back in discrimination.
I just think it's so interesting that the company, this was not negotiable, you know, for many of these guys. I mean, they would negotiate all sorts of things, but not this week, every year.
You always had the trap of you're going to be fired.
Oh.
But then you step back. Can't go on without me.
Well, and I think probably just so many of you did it. You know, it was just a couple of guys.
We requested it. It was a vacation schedule vacation.
So you could request it ahead of time. Did anybody ever get fired for going, or was there anybody ever said, no, you can't go this week? I mean, you know, turned down?
Everybody said that, you know, they all said, you can't go.
And then they all...
Talking about the foremen and stuff like that.
I bet some of the foremen went too, didn't they?
Sure they did.
This is so funny to me.
And even to the place, you know, I worked for Grandma's School's transportation supervisor, and that was one of the stipulations. I said, yeah, I'll work for you. But I go to Colorado or Wyoming or someplace like that, you're not in here, and that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the fact of this, the last year that I worked for him, I got this very morning to go.
So you... In the final years at Rio, you went through some changes. I mean, the factory went through some big changes, ownership-wise, and what they were producing.
The quality.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm wondering is how you felt about the changes in the man ownership and what you saw going on.
The ownership, Alcoa, aluminum, and stuff, they came in to, as far as I was concerned, to buy the... Well, the first thing I did is start selling things out.
Divisions and parts of the company?
Yeah. They said you had too large inventory and all that stuff, but when they shoot out and all that kind of stuff, man, we just selling stuff like that. You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's
why we have backup tanks. Did you hear it click?
I didn't hear it.
Seemed like a long time.
You can take my tape home with you and play yours and then play mine. If you see, hear something, I might, I'll make a new tape.
Okay.
Or something you want.
It was interesting when Diamond T's, when they bought 9T off and brought that down for engineering, they did need a little more revitalization. So get to a point where you don't do the road test or anything like that to prove that you're hot at full standard. It was really interesting because when we used to do our test driving stuff, we used to drive a semi down to Michigan City, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And we would stop at the different coffee stops where the truckers stop.
Mm-hmm.
Why all the truckers would get around what kind of an engine you've got in there. And our orders were WOT, wide open truck. We got on the highway, which were all two lanes back in those days, and we had 40,000 pounds of concrete box loaded onto a trailer. We would go wide open truck all the way down through there unless we stopped for coffee or whatever. And we had places we'd stop. It was fantastic to be able to talk to the truckers and hear the concerns and so on. And we carried it back.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in the engineering garage, I always said, unless you worked on assembly line, you couldn't be an engineer or a mechanic because you have to live the experiences on assembly line in order to know what you have to do in engineering to make that better.
Yeah, I don't think that goes on too much today either.
No.
But the truckers who knew what they wanted from a truck respected the real truck and its engine.
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And when they first came out with the big V8 that they had, that was really the rage. But also, even when they converted over into, they used a lot of Caterpillar diesels and a lot of Cummins diesels and stuff towards the end.
Diesel engines?
Yeah.
Huh.
And we used those in our buses too. When we built the inner city buses, we had what they call a Waukesha engine, a pancake laid underneath the floor. And the first lawnmowers that, when they took them out to show them, was in a built inner city bus that we had built. And it also had sort of glass floor, this plexiglass floor.
Wow.
Oh.
So you walk into a down the CD mansion.
Oh,
floor.
Wow.
Is that right? And you would take that out for, I won't say demonstration, I was trying to say distribution. And I knew that wasn't what I wanted, demonstration.
And then we had another bus that we built up, and they would put all the lawnmower products in, and then they would tour the country with that.
Oh, really?
To have the solar power plant, use it, and have the lawnmowers inside the buses. So that they could walk down a little aisle and out the back and see the lawnmowers on both ends.
Where would you take this vehicle?
I didn't do it.
No, I mean, whoever took it, what types of places would they be doing?
Fairs, county fairs, or any public gatherings where they had anything large. They also had a real Primalon, I don't know if you remember that, what was radio control. The guy was set back here, and the lawnmower would run back. That really starts back in this day.
They probably figured, oh, that's the way it's going to be in the future, right?
Yeah, I remember when I was in grade school, we all thought we were going to, that the world in the future was going to
all
be
automated, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd be flying instead of driving, and the cars would be on those that you did drive would be on some sort of a metallic track, or electronic track, so there would never be car accidents, you know, and you'd just get on this track like a train on a rail and go to your destination. It may happen someday.
We built the bus one time. It was built up to be like a motorhome.
Oh, uh-huh.
And had place underneath the bottom of that golf cart. You got to pick this golf cart and have the bar in the back.
Is this custom?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard before that they built things, custom things for celebrities like Gail Robertson with his horse.
I met Gail Robertson.
Did you? Were you involved in working on some of the specialized horse trailers and things you bought?
No, it was basically a truck engineering when he first came in with the month.
I have some questions about when you were...
Did you ever make a farm tractor? Yes.
tell me about the farm tractor. What was it called? Did they actually build it, or did they kind of...
No, they...
Was that subcontractor?
Well, they contracted out, I think. But as far as I know, they only built about 8 months or 3 months.
When was this?
Oh, it's a long time ago.
It was in the old days.
Right. Was that while you were working in?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It was a six-cylinder inline.
That wasn't the Samson tractor, was it?
I don't know what you call it.
I was going to ask you about the clubhouse. You spent a lot of time there when you were a kid and older, when you were older. Kid.
Sure, because you had three shows.
Three movies.
Three movies,
right.
Yeah.
And your parents took you there and spent time there.
And all the banquets that we had, you had the real banquets and they had the circus there.
Uh-huh. Oh, the circus.
Mm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But it was like a fair light because the people got together and like one fellow monkeys out of walnuts and things like that. We have to have a parrot, and we take the parrot and the monkey, and then we take them down to their exhibits. And, you know, so people from Europe can go in and see it. And they had all their handicraft and everything else.
From the different people who worked there.
So that was within the Rio, they produced the circus. This wasn't the traveling circus like Ringling Brothers at the Mufers Institute.
Oh, I see.
It was behind the clubhouse next to the powerhouse.
Oh, was that always there? Was there one time?
No, it was about 4 years that I knew.
Oh, that it was there that people could go in and out and take things and enjoy.
Did you read The Spirit?
Yes.
Your dad bring it home and your mom bring it home?
I mean, I worked there too.
No, I know, but I meant when you were younger even. Because The Spirits I read were from the 20s and 30s, so.
Real items, too.
The items.
Oh, that was the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fact,
somebody gave
our
us.
Our family pictures on the cover of it for Thanksgiving.
Your family?
What year do you?
No, I don't know.
That was on the cover of the Rio items?
Yeah.
How old were you then, about, do you think?
Maybe I just gotten married and had a child.
Probably sometime in the 50s then. Early 50s?
somewhere 46.
What year did you get
46?
Married?
46.
We're pinning down now.
When's your anniversary?
44.
40.
Okay, so sometime in the mid-40s. Okay, we'll have to look for that one.
That's what I was thinking, because we have some back here.
I have it somewhere. I have our stuff down in the basement. There's pictures and stuff, and you have to fly to them.
Oh.
Have one of those big gondolas, you know, they bought it in. Some of them. Two freezers full of venison. Hams.
Oh my gosh. We're talking a big loss here.
Picked them up, flipped them over, and.
Uh-huh. You talked about driving or owning one of the old Rio ambulance vehicles. Tell me about that vehicle.
Well, it was brown in color, brownish gray. It had fender wells, tires in the fender wells. Okay. Outside of that was basically the same cloth covered seats.
What model, what year would this a car have been, do you think?
I would say it was about 31, 32.
Oh, okay. We're talking big square cars.
Oh, yeah.
And it was used for?
What they call a hospital car. Actually, they had somebody injured to transport them either to a doctor or a hospital or whatever. That's all I know.
Hmm. And then how did you happen to buy it?
They were just continuing it up and using the taxi cabs and stuff.
Oh, really?
Oh, so, okay. It was up for how much did I pay for it? $300.
$300? And do you still have it?
No, I don't have it. I wish I
did. Oh, it would be a lot more now.
It was a beautiful car.
Was it? I wonder whose job it was to be the chauffeur of the hospital car back in those days. Maybe Artis Papin will know. I'm certainly hoping to talk to her.
Did you participate or anybody in your family participate in any of the teams? We had a lot of sport teams like baseball teams and bowling and things like that.
Just the picnics.
Just the picnics. You guys just went to the picnic.
Where were they held?
Greenwich or Trail Park. And it was all summer, late Wednesday.
Right. Those were in August, right? They had those big ones in August.
Maybe that's why they still get together in August.
Yeah, and they had lots of, I read about them, they had lots of people would bring things from their farms, and women would bake stuff, you know, like they have a pie contest and things like that.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
we do it.
Yeah.
And the kids all had games to play and prizes maybe.
Yeah, they gave away a lot of grips and stuff. They would issue tickets and stuff, and they had a lot of nice gifts, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember now, but they were nice back in those days of our establishment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly made
all kind of pop and ice cream.
You went to those as a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you went to Lake Lansing, did you have tickets, free tickets, so you could ride the rides? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really, on the carousel?
It was a big amusement park.
They just took over the whole amusement park
for the day.
Oh.
And so you could ride the.
Well, it was more Union out there. To Lake Lansing Park. But over to Fitzgerald Park, it was put on
by the company.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
You got two different organizations, though.
Right. I've always been interested in if there was, like, you felt your allegiances were torn with things like that, or that you just took advantage of whatever either of them.
My allegiance was what?
Whether your allegiances were.
Company
or torn between Union and company. I mean, obviously they're contesting with each other, but they also gave the workers lots of different things, you know, like these kinds of things.
I was more for the company.
You were?
Basically. Mm-hmm. Because coming from a farm and things like that, the money was good as far as I was concerned.
Right.
You were satisfied with your wages?
Yeah. I guess I did another job.
Sure. I was going to ask you earlier if you ever considered going to Oldsmobile during the years you were at Rio, if the thought the pay was better or the work was more steady, or
Well, we had a chance, and I'm trying to think what it was, the option of going there one day. And I don't remember what it was. And I decided to just take the layoff and not worry about it. My younger brother did go to Muslim. Mm. He worked on, I had an older brother and a younger brother, and both of them worked in export.
Oh, really? So you really were a real family.
Oh, yeah. and
everybody was satisfied with the wage, and you could support your families quite well on what you made.
Yeah, we were. I had father-in-law, sister-in-law, brother-in-law.
Tell you about your wife's family, too.
Yeah.
Golly.
Except for good little wife.
I was going to ask, was she at the Rio? Was that how you met her? I just thought maybe she might have been a...
I met her at Roller Dome.
Oh, the Roller Dome. Oh, I remember that. That was right down here near where Ariel's father's machine shop was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
I don't know.
She was classy gal and was doing skate dances, and I was interested in it, and so I... fellow by the name of Ross, I don't know if you, did you go roller skating?
Mm-hmm.
Fellow by the name of Ross taught me to skate dance, and so that's how.
I never got good enough for skate dancing. If I could stay up off the floor, I was happy. I loved it. That was such a fun place to go. Mm-hmm. A lot of real families were there.
Goldie, gal who played the organ.
Oh, okay.
You remember her?
I remember the organ being played, yeah. But your wife's family all worked at Rio. Or quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Not as many as mine. In fact, at one time, it was a rural regulation that you did not, like if you had a father or someone who was a supervisor, the son couldn't work for him. Or in fact, that's what turned the outer engineering garage for a while, because my dad was under there.
Oh.
Anyway, when I was doing road tests, they brought my father-in-law from the motor plant, who was an inspector, was over inspection in the motor plant, and they brought him over and put him over in charge of road tests. And I was working for him.
Oh.
But I was also a union representative, and I filed a grievance on him the first week.
Was this before you were married?
This is after I
was. And he said to his daughter, you made a bad choice.
Well, yeah, but when they had some of these 50-mile or 100-mile tests that had to be run on these military trucks, every so often you had to run them, I didn't have a telephone. So he would call his other test drivers in the line of duty and...
Oh.
To notify them that he wanted somebody to run his test and that they would do it. And the way he would do it, he would call them late at night and he figured they were in bed. About the second ring, he'd hang up. But then he'd get in his car and drive her up to my house, which is about 6 or 7 miles, wake me up and say, I've got a 50-mile, 100-mile, and it's going to leave tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. I don't want you in there.
And he could say, I called you other guys, but you didn't answer.
That's right. I really didn't approve.
How did that come out, that grievance that you wrote up on that?
I wanted
it. Yeah, you did. And how did he feel about that?
I was really disappointed because he didn't feel that bad.
He knew he was wrong. He knew that wasn't right.
Yeah.
You mentioned test driving, and the thought pops into my mind, the Beaver truck that was built during the war. Did you have... Eager Beaver. Yeah. Did you have anything to do with that? Or?
Yes.
Tell me about that. Did you drive it?
Oh, yeah. I did test. Did you know that was a six-wheel drive vehicle?
It was a what?
Six-wheel drive.
Six-wheel?
Did you know that they have an eight-wheel drive vehicle?
An eight-wheel? No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. Was that also an Eager Beaver?
Yes.
Is that the one that went land, water?
Well, that was floater.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I worked on that too.
Okay.
That was the floater, the one that would go on the land and then down into the water and back out. That was called the floater.
The Eager Beaver was just a very strong, all-terrain type of vehicle that could go on any type of terrain. Is that it?
Cause it
was, oh, it did float it too.
Isn't that the one they tested in the Grand River?
No. They tested it in the gravel pit out north south of town.
Oh, really? Oh, out there at the Jolly Road area? Yeah. Okay. I used to swim there when I was... Well,
what happened when they first put it in the water? Quit running.
Oh, did it?
Because when you went down underneath the water, you're dumping hot fuel back the engine. It was a multi-fuel engine, okay, diesel.
Oh, we heard about the multi-fuel engine.
So you always have a bypass because fuel injectors and stuff will just take so much fuel in the engine. So the excess fuel is pumped back into the fuel tank.
Okay.
And it comes back and it's hot. So if you dump that tank in cold water, it's going to suck water into it. We got it out of the water and it quit. So we found out we had good air pressure, 3 to 6 pounds of air pressure on all the axles and all the fuel tanks in order to not suck the water in the back of it.
That air pressure, putting that in those various places of the vehicle, kept that from being...
Water getting into the axles and the fuel system. It's pressurized.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Also, when it did run and got into the water, seeing that the engine was submerged in water, it automatically acted cooling. When a diesel gets cold, it shoots big plumes of black smoke up.
Oh, gosh.
And when they first did the testing of it, I thought, if I was an enemy, I would just throw a black
plumes, yeah. You know they're coming. Hmm.
So you have to do something to take care of that, too.
I don't think they ever did.
They never did, huh?
Those floaters, there are some of them over that coal in Michigan.
Oh, there are? In a private collection? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Because the guy contacted me and asked me if I knew how they were signed and so on and so forth. And I said, yeah, I got a book on it. So,
you do?
I have no idea.
You did.
It got lost in the flood.
Oh,
yeah. No, I did. He asked me if he could have a copy of it. So I sent it down.
Oh, I
see. He's got it.
And that's in Coleman?
No, in Coleman, Michigan.
Oh, Coleman.
He's got quite a few military jobs.
You were a union representative for a while?
Yeah.
That should have been brought up your father-in-law. Was that the same as a steward?
Yes.
You were the steward. Were you the steward for very long?
No, not very long there. But I was also a committee man. Uh-huh. I was chairman of the Bargain Committee.
You were? When was this?
When I worked for American Motors.
Oh, with American Motors. Not it, when you were at the Rio.
My father was also a crewman.
At the Rio. That must have been after 36, obviously.
Mm-hmm. He was there on the original strike.
He was in 36.
We used to hand food into him because of the station inside. They were in the Sentinel, called the Sentinel strike.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? You were like 10.
No.
You don't remember it too much?
But I hear him talk.
He used to talk about it. Yeah. Yeah, we've had some people who remembered their parents. In there. One guy who went in, who was brought in as a kid, and remembered being in the plant.
Yeah, his dad took him in with him.
Yeah.
He got to go inside.
My dad used to, the real car that you have out here, he used to test drive those. They made some blankets up in the seating room and stuff up there on the seat material.
Mm-hmm.
And what would he would do, it's like this roar or whatever you call it, a mohair or whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
But he used to stop and pick us up, kids up, and he would take us up to Elma where they, you could, all the chocolate shake you could bring 50 cents.
Ooh, yum.
So we were filled up with that, and then he had to continue on and go just so many miles till they put us in the back seat of the car. He would put us in the back seat of the car and cut us up and made the mohair blanket.
Wow.
And I think I have a mohair blanket.
That was made from the fabric of that was seat covering.
So he used to take you on some of the test drives.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that must have been fun.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I just wanted to be a test driver, so that's what I ended up. Engineering McKinnon.
Yeah, I think we've taken up quite a bit of I think
so.
Not about my time.
I can't think of anything else that I need to ask, except that I can... Mr. Aves went on to say... talking about military trucks and the test driving that he did, he went on to tell us that the military trucks that he test drove had no heaters in. And in the winter, if there was snow and ice and blowing winds, it was pretty cold, and some of those cabs were open. And so they used to hook up a type of a hand heater and plug it into the where a cigarette lighter would be. And he also said that they had to coat the windshields, because there was no defrosters, they had to coat the windshields with a glycerin type of product that would keep it from icing over while they drove it. And this is the end of the interview with Otto Aves, January 4th, 1993.